You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening, I'm Al Voner, and this is this week's edition of The Public Eye. So nice to have you with us. Many people believe that we have seen the worst of the COVID epidemic, and perhaps we have. I'm not a medical expert. I can't say for sure what the future holds, but there has been variants that have originated throughout the globe, again, impacting people one way or another, whether you've been immunized or not. Many people are still feeling the effects. But the important thing is that those people, the medical community, the nurses, the doctors, the aides, the people that have been on the front line since the inception of COVID-19 have certainly earned their stars and certainly deserve accolades for their perseverance, for their patience, for their dedication to their jobs and to the patients and the people that they have served, which is in the millions since COVID outbreak. And I said this again globally. And that's why I've invited my guest this week. He's author Bob Delaney. His book is Heroes and Humans. And in the book, Bob talks about those people on the front lines, those nameless people, the ones who spent hours, weeks, days, many times away from their family and friends, not even having the chance to do much with their own personal lives in hopes of saving lives and making those who fell ill to COVID much better. So for the next half hour, we'll be talking with Bob Delaney and getting his insight as to the people he talked to, what he experienced up front and personal, as they say. Bob, nice to have you with us.
Great to be with you, Al. Thank you.
By nature, I mean, you're not a medical practitioner. You don't normally write about medical issues, but I'm going to go out on the limb here and say and ask that the people that you bumped into, the people that you experienced in the medical community during the height of COVID and even right up to today, because you and I talked about that earlier, these people made an impression on you, right?
Oh, tremendous. Yeah, the work I've been doing for the past four decades is in the area of post-traumatic stress. And while I know that not all wounds bleed, invisible wounds can cut as deep as the wounds we do see. So what happened was I was driving by so many hospitals that were saying heroes work here in the early days of COVID. And with the work that, like I said, I've done with the military, law enforcement, first responders, firefighters, I came to understand that whoever is given that title of hero really didn't like it. And that drove me to say, our healthcare workers are at war with an invisible enemy. So I drew parallels to what those in the military, law enforcement, first responders go through. So it's not a book or a story about COVID. It's about the stage that people are on and how they interact with the traumatic events that they are surrounded by. So that was the impetus behind the thought process for the book.
Yeah, in reading the book, too, I mean, just the first chapter, you automatically get a sense, at least I did, how do you go to the hospital, the doc, wherever you may work, a doctor's office, a medical facility, and day in and day out, it's not like a regular routine. Prior to COVID, sure, they had their share of emergencies, but these people being on the front lines, and then, you know, after their shift, whether it be 8, 10, 12 hours or more, having to go home, find some semblance of normalcy, and then coming back to do it all over again, week after week, month after month. I want to get your sense on this. I think you know better than most people that you're not prepared for this when you go through medical school or whatever pre-medical training you have before you take a job, right?
Yeah, I came to find that the healthcare workers, while they're very good at taking care of us, they're not very good at taking care of themselves. And all of the research and studies and interviews that I did, I came to find they really do not get training in this area. You know, our military has tremendous resources, and the resources that are available to those in the healthcare community are not as strong. And so my hope is to be able to move the bar to be able to shine a light on this subject so that we can have this conversation in a mature way, to talk about the fact that those who serve, in whatever way they do serve, and our healthcare workers are serving us in a tremendous way here, that they are also taken care of. And it's also good for them to talk about. Just for example, I'm going to share one story, and I think it capsulizes what takes place. I was speaking to an ICU nurse that had gone through months and months of working in COVID wards. And she just wanted to get out on the lake and spend the day with her husband just to chill out and relax. And they had a great day on the lake. And as they came in to dock the boat at the end of the day, she went to the front of the boat to tie it off, and she started crying uncontrollably. And her husband consoled her. He tied the boat off. And what had happened was, as they were pulling in, there was a small boat on land and had a tarp over it. And it was the same color of the body bags that she had been putting patients in. And she remembered every one of their names and saw every one of their faces. These are the traumas that come as a result of the work that they do. Those who serve see what the rest of the world does not. And so my hope is to be able to, as I said, shine a light on this subject for us to have an understanding. We were hitting pans and clapping and doing all kinds of news stories about heroic work being done by the healthcare workers during the early days of COVID. And I think it's kind of waned. You know, like, we're not as focused on the people that have served us. And it's not only during COVID. It's they've been doing this kind of work and seeing these kind of trauma. And while they understand that death is part of what their work is, not at the level they were seeing it. And they never had to be afraid, as you said, to take home a disease. You don't have healthcare workers afraid of bringing cancer home, but now they have to be afraid of bringing COVID to their own loved ones. So it changes the interaction that they have at home and in their personal lives.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. I mean, we as non-medical people, in other words, not working in the medical community, have some sense of what's going on. And we've had our fears, masking up, getting vaccinated, avoiding crowds and all that. These people had no choice. It was either do that or quit your job. And that's where I want to pick up with that. But I just want to take a quick pause and remind listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Voner, and on this week's edition of The Public Eye, I'm joined by author Bob Delaney. His book is Heroes and Humans, a book that I think really hit a nerve with Bob in putting together and talking about the medical community and first responders, all those who have had to play, who've had to work and exist on the front lines from the inception of COVID to where we are today. And at the end of the day, still trying to go home and have some normalcy in their lives, which has been very, very difficult. Two things, Bob, that stuck out, and you touched upon it, but I just want to get another sense. That woman, the ICU nurse, coming off the lake with her husband, trying to find some semblance of normalcy, only to see a tarp over a boat being a constant reminder of the, as you said, the body bags that she so often had to put those that passed on into. I don't think we recognize that. You know, I think they think, most people think, when they get into the car, they drive home, well, it's behind you. It never is. How many of these people, in putting the book together, did you have the opportunity to speak to that have found that it impacted, obviously, themselves, whether it be a man or a woman, but also their home life and spilled over into their children, their grandchildren, their other relatives, their spouses? Did many of them find very difficult to lead a normal life?
Yeah, great point, Al, because when we're dealing with post-traumatic stress, when someone goes through a traumatic event, and the triggers that come, and the ongoing, at times, nightmares, feeling uneasy, isolation, avoidance, all of the telltale signs come as a result of the experience that they have. I my thirst for knowledge in this area came as a result of the experiences I had many, many years ago. I was in law enforcement and did a deep undercover job back in the 70s, where I infiltrated the Genovese and Bruno crime families of traditional organized crime, the Mafia, La Cosa Nostra, whatever term you want to give to it. And while people were telling me at the end of that, when I surfaced and we arrested all these bad guys, that I was a tough guy, I was a brave guy, they were saying I did heroic work. Well, I didn't feel like a hero, because during the entire time I was undercover, I was living in fear. I was afraid. And yet, I couldn't tell anybody that. I had to go about do my job. And that experience, they didn't see me at 2 o'clock in the morning walking around the house with my gun out, pushing shower curtains back because I was paranoid they were coming to get me. So that experience of going through post-traumatic stress, it drove me to become a student of it. And then I started doing a variety of work with military throughout Iraq and Afghanistan, Asia, Europe, at all our military bases. And today I work with the Harvard Global Mental Health Trauma Recovery Program. Dr. Richard Malika is the director. And he has a very simple statement. He said that trauma is inescapable in life. And what a true statement. We are all susceptible to it. The most common cause of post-traumatic stress is a car accident. And anyone who has been through one understands what I mean, because when you get in that vehicle, you become hypervigilant. You become fearful that it's going to happen again. So think about and magnify that with folks that are going through a traumatic experience, whether it be Ukraine right now, or if it's being on the front lines of COVID. It's very much a war-like situation. And so making sure that these are conversations that people are allowed to have, when we give permission for these conversations to be had, and if you and I share with each other our story, it validates our feelings. These are important steps.
And Bob, I wanted to ask you of post-traumatic stress, and you're right, it's not, you know, obviously we're talking about, you know, medical practitioners on the front line, especially since COVID, but as you said, military, law enforcement, firefighters, and anybody that has to be thrown into the throes of danger one way or another. I think some people get a sense that, well, you know, once you get home or if you get a week's vacation, you kind of regroup. You never, and you said it yourself, it never really goes away. You maybe learn to cope with it to some degree, but it does have a profound long-term effect on each of these people's lives, right?
Yeah, and you hit it right on the head. It's about how we interact with it, right? Emotions are meant to be felt, and we do everything we can not to feel emotions, right? We're very good at, like, I use this when I do presentations. You know, you can go to a bar on a Friday night and you'll see drunks trying to act sober, and then you go home that night and you turn on TV and you'll see actors and actresses trying to act drunk, and nobody fools us. We see it. And so understanding that our emotions and our feelings need to be processed as a result of what we experience. And traumatic events, I wrote an article in August of 2020 predicting the post-traumatic stress with the healthcare community. The article was in the Tampa Bay Times. And unfortunately, it's come true. And what also results is burnout. And people are leaving the profession. We're even seeing suicides in the healthcare profession as a result of all of the traumas that they are experiencing. And then think about the hours that they're working. And like we've already fleshed out, you know, over their careers, they were not holding hands of folks that were dying. Usually family members were bedside with people that were in the last days of their lives. They were setting up Zoom calls and FaceTime in order for that to happen. I heard from nurses that people would write on whiteboards because they couldn't have conversations because of being tubes that were in them or because of the respiratory illnesses, saying, please don't let me die. These kinds of things impact human beings. I know we compartmentalize. Cops do it. Firefighters do it. Military do it. Healthcare workers do it as well. They compartmentalize what they're experiencing. And yet at some point, It has to be processed and allow it. I believe in peer-to-peer conversation. I used to call it peer-to-peer therapy, but I take away every medical-sounding term in having this conversation. This is a human condition. It's not a mental illness. Post-traumatic stress is a human condition. It happens after hurricanes. It happens after natural disasters. Post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, is a diagnosis. And so there's a difference. Post-traumatic stress is not at the diagnosis level. So we have to be able to have this conversation and have education awareness. We've done this with HIV, AIDS, alcohol, drugs, tobacco. When we have education and awareness, we become better equipped to navigate with an issue. And I believe it's time to have a national conversation about trauma and truly about it, because PTSD is the most loosely used term in my view. You don't get PTSD if Starbucks gets your order wrong. I mean, people throw that word around as if it's like, oh, I have PTSD. So PTSD is a diagnosis.
Right.
By a medical professional. But post-traumatic stress in and of itself, that is something that we all are exposed to at times in our lives.
And I'm going to assume that in spite of the fact that there are so many people being exposed to that, especially, as you said, in the book, and what we're talking about this evening, the fact that, front lines, your job, first responders, they deal with it more than most people. There's just not, I get the sense there's just not enough out there. I'm talking about in terms of therapies or there's only so much that a local psychologist can do, or, you get a class together once a week, maybe a couple of times a month. So there is a dire need to help these people who have to deal with, as you said, this ongoing stress, or otherwise their lives become totally unraveled. So is it government's role to step in and do something to help these people?
I'm not so sure that I think it's important that we have the education awareness programs, but I really believe that grassroots programs are the answer.
Mm-hmm.
So within an organization, within a group, I've been working with military special forces for decades now, and the time that I spend with them, we talk about grassroots. We're not asking. I said to him, if you're waiting for the Pentagon to say every Friday at 4 o'clock, we're going to have peer-to-peer conversation, that's not going to happen. So the reality is we have to create these environments within the organizations that sometimes you have to create what you want to be part of.
Right.
And so that's the reason heroes are human, lessons in resilience, courage, and wisdom from the COVID front lines. We're not talking about doom and gloom. We're talking about the resilience that was shown during COVID, the courage that took place and the wisdom that we take from these experiences, and how can we pass them on from one generation to another so that, we've been talking about this forever. After the Civil War, it was called soldier's heart. After World War I, it was called shell shock. World War II, we refer to it as battle fatigue. And then the Korean and Vietnam Wars, we refer to as flashbacks. Today, we call it post-traumatic stress disorder. I like to call it post-traumatic stress. At times, Al, I refer to it as operational stress in speaking with the military, and I'm doing the same thing with the healthcare workers. This stressor comes as a result of the operational work that you do. And so not looking at it as a mental illness, because that scares people away. The stigma that
right.
comes around this conversation is what scares people away from the conversation.
Right.
I believe that the more we have this, like on shows like yours, to be able to have an honest, adult, mature conversation about this subject.
Bob, do most of these people, my wife will say, your annual is coming up. I don't need an annual. It's that internal fear of finding something or exposing some vulnerability. So the most of these people, the people that you've worked with over the years, the models in the book, are most of these people who go through all of this, this post-traumatic stress, are they willing to work, as you said, with grassroots organizations, with peers? Are they willing to open up, to share their feelings in hopes that they can find some solace?
That's the difficult part. And creating the environments for to allow it to happen. So with wounded warriors that I've worked with family members of soldiers who have passed, how do we create those environments? So the traditional way of sitting on a couch, and please don't interpret that I'm saying we don't need the medical side of the house. I just think we've over-medicalized this conversation. I really believe that we have tremendous resources. We just have to figure out how to build better bridges and create environments. Just to give you an example, some of the what I refer to as 21st century therapies are more of keeping active people engaged and active. With the military, wounded warriors, do you remember a movie called Taking Chance? It was Kevin Bacon played the role of the escort officer who brought the Marine's body home from the Iraq War. And the reason it was called Taking Chance, it was a story about Chance Phelps, a young Marine that was killed. And it was to educate the American public about what an escort officer does in honoring those who serve. Mm-hmm. In today, John Phelps, his father, has a ranch out in Wyoming that he allows to be used for hunting expeditions. And it's for wounded warriors, cops, firefighters, those who serve. And it's not about the hunting. It's about going out as a unit and then sitting around that campfire and having peer-to-peer conversations. So creating environments that allow for these conversations to take place, I think, is what's important. Again, we shine the light on the subject. More often than not, the answers come from the seats, the folks that are involved in those kinds of operations. At times, I refer to my old job in the New Jersey State Police. That uniform made me feel like I could leap tall buildings in a single bound. you put that uniform on, you think you're able to. Then the same thing with the military. Well, no different today. I'm finding that when you put a lab coat on or your scrubs, you think you can handle this.
Right.
And they do. But there's still a time when you get away from the actual work that you're doing, from that emergency work, from all of that you're doing, to be able to process, to be able to allow yourself to be a human being. Heroes are human. I have another book that I wrote called Surviving the Shadows, A Journey of Hope into Post-Traumatic Stress. And the reason I called it Surviving the Shadows, Al, I believe we all have shadows in our lives. But I say to folks, never be afraid of a shadow, because for a shadow to exist, that means there's light nearby,
right?
And it is our responsibility to ourselves and to each other to get to that light.
I love the, as you said, the title to the new book, Heroes Are Humans. That really hits the nail on the head. That people who neighbors, they watch there, and I have them in my neighborhood. I'm sure you have them in your neighborhood. People on the front lines, police officers, firefighters, medical practitioners. They get used to that. I've heard that since I was a kid. Well, you know what? You see enough death and you get numb. Well, maybe there's an isolated incident where somebody just is able to deal with it. But I think most people, as you said, take it home, internalize, and then it starts to eat them up, and they really do need. And it was that's very enlightening, the story you told about the gentleman who runs the ranch out west and opens it up for people who are going through things that he lived it. He saw it through his own family losing a family member. So it's really rewarding. We've got just a couple of moments left, so let me ask you in wrapping things up. What did you learn from writing the book?
I learned that the men and women who serve us we're all susceptible. I knew that we were all susceptible to post-traumatic stress. It's just that those who serve are in the higher risk group. And so healthcare workers, nurses, doctors, these are noble professions. And there's a tendency to think that they can handle all of this, and the parallels that I drew between what takes place with our military, CAHPS firefighters, I found a lot of similarities that are taking place with our healthcare workers. And I think that these kinds of conversations that are being had on your show will open a door so that the next generation hopefully does not have this same kind of hiding of emotions that are taking place, or of the fear of having the conversation. The more that we open up and process what is going on inside of us, I use an analogy, and I'll do it real quick. But I ask people to imagine I'm holding a big balloon full of air. How do I get the air out of the balloon? I can take a pin and pop it.
Yeah.
I get the air out, but I don't have a balloon anymore. I can let it go, and it flies all over the room. We don't know what happened to the balloon. It goes out the door. But if we're patient and willing to listen to sounds we do not want to hear, it may hurt our ears, but we turn it upside down. We let a little air out at a time, and it makes a screeching noise. And eventually we get all the air out, and we have a full balloon we can use again one day. That's us with trauma.
Yeah.
We need to get the air out of our balloons. But what do? More often than not, we push down one on top of another, on top of another. And if you take that analogy to its fruition, at some point, the balloon is going to burst. Yeah. So my hope is that we are able to create conversations and create environments that allow for air to come out of the balloon.
Great advice. Great advice. The book is Heroes Are Humans. My guest has been author Bob Delaney. And Bob, real quick, if people want to just outreach you directly, maybe pose a question, find out more about your background, is there a website, is there an email, a way they can find out more about you?
Yeah, then go to www.delaneyconsultants.com and be able to get directly to me.
Great. Again, the book is Heroes of Humans. My guest has been author Bob Delaney, insightful book, putting into practice things that are needed by people on the front lines, people who see stress, who see death, who see suffering on a day-to-day basis. We all deal with it in a different way, but when it's part of your life, when it's part of what you do on a day-to-day basis, the impact is just so much more stressful to those individuals. If you have any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.